But I introduce us by saying that the National Council of Jewish Women's Pittsburgh Branch, through its oral history interviewers, Harold Kimball and Judy Rubenstein, are interviewing Mr. Donald Butler on May 12th at his home in Squirrel Hill. Now, Mr. Butler, would you please give us your name and address and age in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania?
Well, I was born in Pittsburgh here, and I'm 72, and we live at 5710 Bartlett Street in Squirrel Hill.
Very good. Now, we're going to... would you care to tell us a little about your immediate family, your mother, father, sisters and brothers, anything way back when you were starting out as a child?
Well, I think the first thing I have to tell you is that I have a wonderful wife.
That's later. First we want to hear about...
You want to hear about
yeah, then we'll find out how you found
her. My mother and father were married outside of Connellsville in a little town called New Haven. They referred to it as Old New Haven. Mom came here as a young girl, and my father came here as a young man.
Where did they come from?
My mother came from Suwalk, which is at that time was called, it was referred to as Rus Poland. It was, one day it was Russia, one day it was Poland. And my father came from Russia. They were married not far from Pittsburgh. We have...
What years did they come, do you know?
1906, I think. Something like that.
And what was your mother's name?
Molly Rosenson. Frank Schwartz's wife... Ruth is a cousin of mine. Her father and my mother were brother and sister.
He's from Germany, right?
Yeah, but Ruth is Ruth's father, Aaron, was my uncle Aaron.
How about that?
Estelle Comey is our cousin. Her father, Maury Fisher, was my first cousin because his mother and my mother were sisters.
Estelle's
grandmother.
Mm-hmm. Were they in the medical business?
No.
Or is that someone else?
No, they were in the, as I remember it, they lived in the north side. I think the Fishers had a milk business at that time, in the early days. Well, the milkmen used to go around with horse and wagon, they tell me, in those days. Mm. Mm. Like they do it like they did in Israel the first time we were there. And I have a brother, Abraham. I have a sister, Evelyn Morris. And what else can I tell you?
Well, were you born here in Pittsburgh?
Right in Pittsburgh. I was born in the St. Rosalia's Foundling Asylum.
Oh, why?
I don't know. That was where the maternity ward was, I guess.
I always thought those were for unwed mothers.
Yeah. that was the maternity area there.
Where was it?
St. Rosita is up on Bedford Avenue, I think. I don't remember much of that time, but we later moved to Shenley Heights, Heron Hill.
Oh, yeah.
And we had a home at the corner of McNeil Place and Webster, right near the Heron Hill Reservoir.
Know it well.
That building was at the corner of McNeil and Webster. Don McNeil, who was the traffic engineer in Pittsburgh, owned that street. And we had a tennis court there, and we had a croquet court and a volleyball court. It was really wonderful. We used to play tennis for 3-4 hours at a time.
I mean, it was all yours. It wasn't a park.
No, it was private. All private. And as
was
kids,
that unusual?
Yeah. As kids, we were allowed to play all day as long as we would water the court and roll it and line it for the men to come home. At 4 o'clock, the businessmen would come to play. Don McNeil would come, and George Pease and other people, a lot of Ernie Nasser and others, they would all come to play. So we were allowed to play all day in the summer. I developed a pretty good game. As a matter of fact, I was on the tennis team at school and everything. But that was a very, very wonderful period. And I was bar mitzvah from that house.
About what year would that be?
I guess it was in the 30s. I don't remember.
Yeah. Well, but what about your home atmosphere? Was a religious background, economically, culturally? How was the discipline?
We were not rich. We were very comfortable. We always had everything we needed and we wanted. Our home was a very traditional, very observant home. We would go to shul every day, Shabbos.
Which one? Do you remember?
Yes, Agudas Achim. That shul's not there anymore. we went to that shul for many, many years. And I was bar mitzvah in that shul.
Did you ever hear of Beth Yaakov?
Beth Yaakov, yeah, was down on the hill.
Oh, I see.
We were up
Heron Hill.
Uptown, yeah.
Yeah.
At the time when the theater was 10 cents to go to the movies.
Good old days.
It was less than that. I remember that.
10 cents.
And you're not as old as we are.
10 cents. But at any rate, comfortable. My father was in the grocery business, and they worked hard. Everybody worked hard.
Uh-huh.
And Mom was always, always active in community things. I guess if she were alive today, she would probably be classed as an activist.
Uh-huh.
Because she was involved in so many things. She helped found the Bickerhoven Society here in Pittsburgh. And there was an organization called Ezras Nushin that was it was called the Hebrew Ladies Sick and Relief Society. Ezras Nushin, Nushim. And they had a collector, his name was Mr. Lipson. You know the Lipson family here? Lipson?
From Braddock?
No, Pittsburgh. Mr. Lipson was the collector. He would collect 20 cents a week. He used to come around, collect 20. I remember him because Mom would always make lunch for him when he came.
Mm.
And he, you know Sylvan Lipson? You know the name?
That's
you should
funny.
Remember the
Don't
name.
Know.
It's an old-time family in Pittsburgh. Anyway, his father was the, he used to come around to collect for these two organizations, 10 cents for Bickerhoven Fulham and 10 cents for Ezras Nushim. I remember it as a kid.
What did those organizations do?
Well, Bickerhoven was to visit the sick.
They
would take care of the sick people.
Mm-hmm.
And the old Montefiore Hospital was down on Center Avenue. That was where they would go. And also, now I remember many times when I would come home from Hebrew school, maybe our dinner wasn't ready, but Mom was down the street taking care of a woman who had just given birth and making meal for their family and mm-hmm. taking care of. See, in those days there were no professionals. See, today everything is professionalized. It was a time when everybody helped everybody. And that was a time when these organizations were first started.
Yeah.
And people helped everybody. Then they got involved, and Mom was deeply involved with the synagogue and with the sisterhood there. And they called at that time used to call the Ladies Auxiliary.
That's right.
she was. And we were all given a very, very strong Jewish education. I had private tutors as well as I went to the Hebrew Institute for many, many years and graduated their. Elementary school, their high school, and their teachers' training school.
We always had a day school.
No, it was not a day school.
Oh, you mean after?
Yeah, I went to Heron Hill Junior High, then I went to Shenley, and then we moved out to Squirrel Hill, and I went to Alderdice. I graduated mm-hmm. Alderdice. But that was a different time, and some of the people who were in class with me at that time, or you may know some of them, Ethel Beres, Ethel Comey,
mm-hmm.
That's Shalom's mother.
Mm-hmm.
She was with us, and we had Norman Gordon, who now is in Phoenix, I think. He lived in Mount Lebanon. There were
used to be my teacher.
We had just a handful of people at that time, even then. And I studied for many years with Rabbi Kaplan. Rabbi Kaplan is Dr. Norman Cohen's father-in-law. Was a Rav in Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
A very, very learned man. One of the few, most rabbis knew Hebrew. They all knew Hebrew, there's no question. But very few could speak Hebrew. And Rabbi Kaplan, even though he was European, he was the rabbi at Beit HaMedrash HaGadol, you know, the old shul downtown. He was that was Beck Kaplan's father.
Oh.
Beck Kaplan's father was Rabbi Kaplan.
Oh.
And he taught us Talmud in Hebrew, which was rare.
Oh.
He was a wonderful teacher, and I attribute a lot of my learning to him because he was a very lovable, wonderful kind of a person. Henrietta Chotner.
Sure.
You know her? You know Henrietta Chotner?
Yeah.
Was my teacher in the early days at the Hebrew Institute.
Studying to be a rabbi?
No.
Just studying like we all went to Seder?
I still study. I still go to class. I have a class every Shabbos afternoon.
Uh-huh.
And we learn Talmud. And study just for the sake of studying.
Yeah.
And this was, but the family was always an observant family, and Shabbos was always a very important day for us. Our house was always full of people, mm-hmm. strangers who would come to the city, and as it is here, even in this house. If you had been here last night, we had somebody here from Philadelphia whose wife is in the hospital, an observant person, and he stayed with us. Mm-hmm. We've had people staying in our home now.
That's wonderful.
3 months at a time.
Wow.
That was the time of a different, there was a different era. There was no day school in Pittsburgh. And my parents were very careful and very concerned that we should have a good, strong Jewish education.
Yeah.
And both my brother and I and my sister all had a very, very thorough Jewish education.
How was life in the city then compared to today? Well, you did mention.
No, I don't remember that much. I mean, I remember. We went to when I was at Taylor Alderdice. It was a great, great school.
Yes,
wonderful.
It was new when you went.
It was up for several years, but it was a. We enjoyed it. It was wonderful. We didn't have a car. We walked. They didn't have busing. Didn't take the government's money for anything.
Where did you go before Alderdice?
I was at Chenley for just about 2 years, or a year and a half. I was at Heron Hill High School, so junior high.
Were you involved in anything political at any time then?
No, I didn't.
How about your school days? Friends, teachers, classroom, discipline? You did mention.
Well, we had. I had a number of. Lifelong friends who, I don't know whether you know Gene Lippman, he's a rabbi in Washington, a friend of mine, grew up in our home practically.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice, lovely people. And, I had wonderful associations with a lot of good people.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed it, and they enjoyed it, and we didn't know anything different. It was a kind of a pleasurable life that days were full. I would go to school all day, and we would get out at 3:45 or so, and then I would go to the Hebrew Institute for Hebrew studies,
mm-hmm.
and would stay there sometimes till 8:00 at night.
We had
good teachers, very, very good teachers. That the Hebrew Institute at that time was...
You didn't have the old-time teacher who walked up and down the aisle with a...
No.
None of that.
No, we had a regular school. The old Hebrew Institute, you know where that is? On Wiley Avenue near the...
Dinwiddie?
The K Community House.
Yeah.
That's still a beautiful building.
Near where?
Wiley, and right across the street from the Carnegie Library, the Wiley Avenue branch of Carnegie Library. Still a beautiful place. We had a playground. They had busing before busing was invented. Mm-hmm. The bus used to come to pick us up because we lived far away from there.
Yeah.
Used to pick us up and take us to school. And I remember Paul, the bus driver. And if you look in the Hebrew Institute and the JEI now, you'll see pictures of the old crew where we used to. There's a picture there of me in a Hanukkah play. So it's still up there.
You mean the JCC?
No, JEI, Jewish Education Institute. That's where the Hebrew Institute used to, the building of the Hebrew Institute on 4th Street?
Oh, yeah.
That's now been changed. That the Hebrew Institute does not, no longer exist. It's called the Jewish Education Institute.
Hmm. Would you say that your life was involved more with the Jewish community, or
yeah.
did you also have a secular?
Yeah, I was involved. Well, I had many friends. I went to regular school.
Mm-hmm.
But I must say, in all honesty, that we didn't socialize. And I mean, very frequently we would have people come to our home and visit with us. For example, on Shabbat, there were very few homes that we went to we would visit because they were non-observant.
I see.
And my parents were very concerned that we should have a strong family spirit and observe Jewish tradition, Jewish customs.
With kosher and...
Everything is kosher, always. I used to always bring my lunch to school because I didn't buy lunch in school. And then when we moved to Aldergeist, we lived, you know where Daniel's Cleaners used to be? That building right at the corner?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's where I grew up. We lived in that building right across from Taylor Aldergeist. And so I'd run home for lunch.
Yeah, not
and the mother didn't work, of course. You know, I mean, it was an entirely different kind of world.
It sure was. So that was your adolescent years?
Yeah, my adolescent.
Yeah, fun and recreation.
What was your father's name?
Frank Butler.
Now you can tell us.
Okay, and was Abraham, your brother, older or younger?
Older. I'm the baby.
Okay, and Evelyn also
Evelyn
was older.
Evelyn is older. Evelyn's the oldest.
Yes, would like to hear something about your courtship, how you met your now wife, and your marriage, and what led up to it.
Well, I can tell you at the outset that they threw away the pattern after my wife. Her name is Chantze, Chantze, and she is in my mind, the most unique person in the world. We met... I was head counselor at a children's camp in New Jersey, and we were involved with a Zionist group, Hapoel HaMizrahi, and we had the summer camp for children. Mm-hmm. I was head counselor there for 3 years, and 1 year we had the National Convention of Hapoel HaMizrahi there, and sure enough, Chantze came as a visitor from Boston. My wife's a former Bostonian. And we met, and we maintained a long-distance courtship. And I went into the Army shortly after that. And...
this was in the 40s.
Right? Mm-hmm. I went into the Army in 43.
Mm-hmm.
And we maintained a very warm relationship over the years. And... when I came out in 46, I came out in February, we were married in June. And she comes from a very, very illustrious family. Her parents, those are her parents. This is my father, this is my father and mother.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Nice looking.
And this was Fancy's parents.
Mm-hmm.
Important family. Both my mother-in-law and father-in-law were born in Palestine. They both come from tremendous families in Jewish history.
Her
name was Bard, B-A-R-D. That was shortened from the Hebrew name, which is now the name of the family is called Bar Zakai. But when my father-in-law escaped from, left Palestine, because he didn't want to fight on the side of the Turks at that time. The Turks, this was before
World War One.
Yeah, didn't want to fight on the side of the Turks, and he was in the yeshiva, and they wanted to conscript these people, so they made their way out through Cairo and through. And he was already married, and then his wife followed later. If Chantzi had been born in Jerusalem, she was born in Boston. If she had been born in Jerusalem, she would have been the seventh generation Jerusalemite.
Wow.
Her great-grandfather, her great-great-great-grandfather was the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim.
Well,
who was that?
Shmuel Salant. Shmuel Salant. S-A-L-A-N-T. He was the Rav in Yerushalayim for 70 years.
Yeah. Was that Sephardic?
No, Ashkenazi, Ashkenazi family. And as a matter of fact, an interesting tidbit, when we were in Israel a few years ago, we went on a tour with somebody going through the old city. And they showed the old Churva Shul, the old synagogue, where Rav Salant was the Rav. And they showed his home, because these are historic sites. So when we broke for Coca-Cola or something, or some seltzer, I said to the guide, the young lady, I whispered in her ear, I says, you know, that this young lady at my side, I said, is the great-grandchild of Rav Shmuel Salant. Well, she got all excited and ended up everybody wanted to take a picture with her. Because, no, it was a very interesting, and the family is a very, Chantzi is a, she had been involved with Hebrew Institute ever since we came to Pittsburgh. Professor Abrams, Saul Abrams' father, conscripted her right away because she graduated the Hebrew Teachers College in Boston and was a very, very capable teacher and with a heart, with a warmth that is necessary. So she has been teaching and has been in executive position at the Hebrew Institute for as long as we've been married. And with a hiatus there for a few years when the children were young. She didn't teach at that time. She took care of the kids. We were married in Boston in June of 46.
Mm-hmm. Well, how was your experience in the Army?
Fascinating.
Did you maintain your kosher eating?
I didn't eat any meat in the Army the whole time I was in the Army.
Yeah, for 3 years.
Yeah, 3 years.
Never ate meat.
Except that I would eat in private homes. And I remember making, I can't say that I kept kosher because I don't know what they put in the half the stuff. Mm-hmm. But I remember very well eating, making a meal of beets and onions, for example. That was a favorite salad people used to have. And they would have, see, we were in field conditions in Oran, for example.
Oran was in
Algeria. And that's in North Africa. See, I was in the Army for 7 weeks. They needed me very badly over there because after seven weeks in the Army, I was sent overseas. I must have been a tremendously valuable piece of property. Yeah, they needed me to win the war.
And you did. And you did win.
We landed in Casablanca, and I went all through.
You were going right after Rommel.
Yeah. Well, no, that was over. Rommel was over already. We were in Casablanca, and then I went we used to travel by what was called 40 and 8s. 40 humans or 8 horses.
Uh-huh.
It was like a
cattle truck.
Called 48, 40 and 8s. And we traveled across North Africa. I went to Fez and Marrakesh and Meknes and all of these other cities.
Well, were you in cavalry or what?
No,
what?
I was a replacement. They needed me so valuable. I was a replacement, and I came to the to Oran, to the first replacement depot, which was in Canastel. Canastel, I told you, that was a place mm-hmm. the Duke of Windsor met Wally Simpson.
Right.
And I was a replacement, and I was supposed to go into ordnance. Ordnance is, you know, that's the ammunition and so forth.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I just reminded myself as I'm telling you this, when I came to Fort Meade, my orientation, the first orientation, Judge Lewick, you know Judge Lewick?
Sure.
He was the proctor at the orientation, I remember. A funny thing? At Camp Meade. But anyway, I went across North Africa and we settled in Oran. And Oran at that time had a tremendous Jewish community. Sephardim, beautiful, beautiful synagogues. The synagogue was patterned after the synagogue in Bordeaux. And there were a number of families that very observant Jews, Sephardim were very observant Jews and very proud of their Jewishness. As a matter of fact, we arrived there 5 days before they were going to distribute the yellow badges for the Jews. Vichy France, Vichy government, had already had the yellow badges in the warehouses ready to distribute to the Jews, but the Jews were fearful and some of them went into hiding, but when we came, the Germans were routed, and the French resistance took over, and we were treated like saviors. They didn't know what to do for us, and we were stationed at Canastel, which was about 7 miles from Oran, and. I would come into Oran. Oh, so I was to be a replacement, to be sent to an ordnance company as a clerk, because I typed very well, and I was going to be a clerk. That was my classification. The morning that I was put on orders, I had a friend, Stanley Goldman, who lives in Rock Island, Illinois. I could show you pictures. Very fascinating. This fellow was a CPA. And we became fast friends. We didn't carouse, we didn't drink the vino, and didn't run around. We were two squares. And we became very warm friends. And at that time, 5 Jewish chaplains were sent over from States to go into different areas of North Africa, to Bizerte, to Algiers, to all these different, but they had to come to this replacement depot to be when I came to the replacement depot, I was there for about 7-8 weeks. So one of my first things that I did, I went to the chaplain's office, and the chaplain at that time was a first lieutenant named William Estes, E-S-T-E-S. He was a Southern Baptist. And I said to him, would we be able to have Jewish services here? Well, he says, certainly, young man, and we'll be glad to do it. Mm-hmm. You can come for, because there was no Jewish chaplain there. So we organized Jewish services and I led the service. Mm-hmm. And in my spare time, I would go in there and read, and, of course, we were kept pretty busy training. All we were doing was marching and running, but we had to keep in shape. So, the day that I was put on orders to go to another unit, Stanley says to me, you won't be happy there. He says, why don't you go up and ask the chaplain if you could stay as assistant? I was a private at that time. You could stay as an assistant. So I went to Chaplain Estes, whom I had gotten to know. He was a very sweet man. And he said, well, he says, there are 5 Jewish chaplains here now who will be transferred in the next week. One of them may come here to this depot. Go up and see him. His name was Jacob Hockman, who has since passed away. He was a rabbi up in Plymouth, Mass. In Mattapan, Massachusetts, Boston.
You have a good memory.
And I went to see him, and I'll never forget. It was 7 o'clock in the morning. I knew I was on orders. It was 7 o'clock in the morning. And Stanley says to me, go on up. Go. And I was a meek kid. I mean, I was a kid then. So I went up, and I'll never forget, he was shaving when I came up. It was before 7 o'clock in the morning. I had davened early, and I went up there. And we had steel helmets at that time. We had to wear in case of attack. And that was the water that we used. That was the only water that we could get. And I remember he was shaving. He had the water, hot water, in this helmet.
He was
shaving outdoors. And I said to him, I introduced myself, and I said to him, you know, I would really like to be your assistant if it would be possible. And he knew he was going to remain here. He says, well, I have no authority. Very sweet guy. He says, talk to Chaplain Estes, and if he can get you off of the shipment, then there's a chance that when I'm assigned here, he wasn't assigned yet, mm-hmm. but because he knew of the work that I had been doing there these last eight weeks. So I went back, and Stanley says, go see him. This kid prodded me. He was a terrific, terrific guy. I went to Chaplain Estes, and I told him. He said, Southern Baptist. He stuttered a little bit, you know. He was He said, yeah, Don. He said, oh, yeah, well, all right, I'll get scratched. And they took me off of that shipment. And the fellow who came after me was, I remember it so well, his name was John.